Okay, for our next presentation, I'm pleased to be joined by Carl Rausner, the Chief Executive Officer of E*TRADE. Carl was appointed CEO in September of last year, and during his tenure, E*TRADE has delivered strong operating leverage while making progress towards the growth goals Carl set out when he became CEO. Carl, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Connor.
So, as I mentioned, you've been CEO for about 15 months now. In your tenure, you've been focused on improving the firm's growth rate, driving efficiency, as well as integrating the Options House platform and improving your customer experience. So we could maybe spend a minute talking about all three, but just first, you know, what are you focused on to improve the firm's growth profile, and how are you progressing versus the public targets you laid out?
Sure. So thank you for having me here. I appreciate it. It's always nice to come be at this conference and obviously meet with you all and get to talk to Connor and get to talk to you all a little bit about where we are. You know, your first question and the way you phrase it, I think requires a little bit of background on what we've done. When I sat here last year, we were about 3 months in. We had laid out some very public growth goals for ourselves, and we really needed to focus the organization. Sitting here today, a year later, I couldn't be happier or more proud of sort of where we are and what we've been able to accomplish during 2017. So when we started, we really had three core initiatives that we looked to. The first was integrating Options House. We finished that in August on the back and middle office side. And the continuation of that will be really driving more value out of that platform as we introduce it through various campaigns and through the technology and functionality out to our E*TRADE customer base. The second thing that we're really focused on was rebuilding our brand, right, and re-energizing ourselves, putting ourselves back on the map as the original sort of irreverent challenger brand that we've always been and punching above our weight. Early results are very good with where we are on the marketing launch. So happy with those two, and then really focusing on the customer experience. Where are we with our customers? What are their pain points? How can we help them and help them have a more enjoyable experience when they use E*TRADE to deal with their financial well-being? So, you know, those are the three core that we've had. I think we've done quite well on the first two, and you know, the third one will be a work in progress as we go forward, and it will always be a continuous improvement. So, when I look at where we were during 2017 and what we've done over the past year, our financial performance, to me, is, you know, the team has pulled together, and as we've focused on the core and we've focused on our growth goals, we've hit some pretty big milestones for us. You know, increasing the size of the balance sheet, right, adding $11 billion in new assets onto our balance sheet, moving them off to on, we should be at our $63 billion target that we announced by year end. That's a 25% increase in the size of the balance sheet, so quite happy with that piece on the financial side. When you look at what we've done with our debt, right, taking the coupon down overall from, you know, a 5% or five handle down into the 3 range, right, something that I really didn't think we'd see at E*TRADE, but now that we're investment grade and we're able to change our risk profile, it's a very good result for us. Right, the focus has led to top-line revenue growth, right, 20% year-on-year. And in addition to that, with focus on, you know, our costs and what we've been able to do on our pre-tax income line, that's up 36%, right, in the same year-on-year period. So driving that growth, we've really been focused on, you know, our op margin, and that's increased from 34% all the way up to, you know, 42% that we've given guidance for 2018. So quite pleased on that front. And, you know, getting our operating our leverage ratios and our targets down in working with our regulators and really taking advantage of the risk profile that we now have and driving those levers down that allowed us to announce the $1 billion stock buyback. Right, we're a third of the way through that program already and intend to, you know, complete it by the end of 18, so we're still very much on track. And in the middle of that, we were able to take on, you know, Trust Company of America and get into a little bit of the custody space, and I'm sure we'll talk more about, you know, the reasons behind that acquisition, but really in looking where we are on the finance and capital front, you know, I couldn't be more pleased. It's, you know, it's amazing to me that it's only been 12 months. So, you know, the other thing that we really focused on was restructuring the organization to put the decision makers and put the right people in the right places to make sure that we could deal with the pace of change that we were putting ourselves through. Right, we really put our feet to the fire with the growth goals that we announced, and we had to have the right organizational structure in place to get that done. We're now, you know, there, and I really like the way the org is shaped up. I like the way the teams have responded. And, you know, the results, you know, over the first 12, 15 months, sort of speak for themselves. You ask about growth goals. We were very public in what we went out with, and we started with four growth goals, and we announced those. The first one in terms of where we are and what we're doing is our assets goal, right? Our net new assets goal. A year ago, for the third quarter, we were at about 3.8% in annualized growth. Now we're at 4.5%, right? A nice trajectory upwards with a lot of the tools and functionality and the things we have underway. I'm quite confident that we'll get to the 5.8% coming out of 2018 that we've talked about. The second one that we laid out was around our new accounts, right? Our new accounts growth and picking up that annualized rate. When we set them, we were growing at about 2.8%. Now we're at a 4.4%, right? On our way toward the goal of 4.8%. Again, within striking distance on that one, and very comfortable around a lot of the activities that we've taken to bring ourselves up to that point. The third one was around derivatives, and the growth in the level of trading that we do on the derivative side as a percentage of our overall trades. We set initially 35% as the goal and target with that. Obviously, we benefited from wrapping Options House into E*TRADE and taking on the volumes that they do on that side. Picking up the pace to where we have at a 31%-32% level is, to me, pretty impressive in the time that we've done it. I see us getting there. The 35%, I think, we'll be at and quite comfortable we'll get there. The reason I can say that is when I look at the pace of growth that we've had over the past year, our derivatives trades have spiked 30% from where they were a year ago, right? A 30% growth rate in the pace of derivatives growth. That's been outstretched by the massive volumes we've seen on the equity trading side, right? The gross number that I've seen coming through on derivative trading, if we were still back sort of where we were at the lower percentage of, or the lower number of actual equity trades, we'd be in a pretty good place at this stage. I like what I see. The final one is around our managed products and where we can get to with that. Some of you may recall, we started this push way back in 2009. From 2009 to 2016, we had grown from zero to $3.7 billion, right? That's nothing to sort of write home about and jump up and down. It was really about seeing whether or not E*TRADE could be a destination for folks to invest with us. Now we've grown that over the past 12 months from $3.7 billion all the way up to $5.3 billion. We've obviously had some tailwinds, but I like what I see, and I think Connor will talk more about sort of the investing advice continuum that we're building and how that plays in. All in all, on the growth goals, I couldn't be happier with what the team has accomplished, with what we've driven in the short 12-month timeframe that we've really been at this full bore. The last part, I think your question was a little bit complicated the way you put it out there, so I'll keep going until people get bored. The last part is really how do we get there? How do we continue to do this during 2018? For me and for E*TRADE, it's more of the same. When we talk about growth and we talk about our biggest opportunities, our biggest opportunity set is actually within our own client base, right? We know that our clients use others. We know that our clients have funds elsewhere. We know what our percentage of assets that we have of our clients on us. Focusing on our active trader push and our derivative trading push and the active trading technology that we have, focusing on Power E*TRADE and really launching that. Looking more at our marketing, what more can we drive now that we've put our brand back on the map, our share of voice is up quite a bit. What else can we drive from that? Launching Power E*TRADE just over the past couple of weeks, we've already seen some early successes, and we think we'll have that same type of a success and a launch when we get back into the investing advice that we'll be rolling out in terms of the continuum we lay out. That's sort of on the first two. The third one is really focusing on the customer pain points, making sure that our customers don't have any reason to leave us and continuing to delight them every day. Reorganizing that area and making sure that the deciders are closer to the people taking the calls from our customers so that we can work through that very quickly and make decisions without having to go through excess layers of bureaucracy. That was pretty big. The final part in terms of driving forward that we've talked about and will continue to talk about, I'm sure, is around corporate services, right? The growth both on the corporate account side of that business and the plan participant side and the penetration that we think that we can achieve with our stock plan participants. Those are the four areas that I see as continuing to drive it. So more of the same, and sorry for the long-winded answer, but I think setting the table was the right way to start.
Yeah, that was helpful. And let's dive into kind of solving some of the customer pain points. And you mentioned, you're aware of your customers that, use other services, and you feel like you can get a higher level of wallet share. What's the early response been to Power E-Trade, and, how much upside do you see from kind of consolidating wallet share among your customers?
Sure. So, Power E-Trade is a recent launch. It's really a very nice value proposition for individuals who do 30 trades a quarter, 10 trades a month. So not what the market or what a lot of our competitors look at as hyperactive traders, but these are individuals who trade 10 times a month in taking care of their own finances. With that comes a price point of $4.95 per contract on the option side, so a compelling value. Some of the best technology out there for options and derivative trading in the options house functionality that is now available within the E-Trade ecosystem. And then the third part is really the experts behind the scenes who provide, advice and guidance on the, on the derivative side on our active trader sales and services team. So early results have been quite good. We've gotten some good feedback from the initial customers who have adopted, but more to come, right? It's early days on the program itself, but I have to say I'm extremely pleased with what I've seen so far. When you talk about, what we see from customer experience side, some of the ways that you attack that are really making sure that you're listening to the voice of your customer. All right, what are they telling you? How are they actually helping you make your business better? What are the things stopping them from having an enjoyable experience? Right, and today, that's almost immediate. Right, if it's not coming to you on the phone, it's coming to you through social media, somebody sending out a tweet. Right, you have to listen. You have to have people in place. But it's not just about listening and doing a workaround. It's about listening and putting a solution in place. So restructuring and removing the layers that we have and putting decision makers just above the folks who are actually taking the calls has allowed us to knock a lot of this out very quickly. Some of the early indicators that you get are, how long does it take a customer service rep to pick up the phone? So our times to answer, are down. How long does it take them to solve the question or solve the problem when they're on the phone? Right, our response times are also down. And the worst thing that you can be in a position is what's your abandonment rate? Right, those are the customers who get to the point where they call to ask a question, they can't get through, so they hang up. Right, if you want to get rid of a customer, that's the best way to do it. Right, is not be there when they try and call and actually reach out for a human being, and they get you have a 3-minute hold time. So our abandonment rates are actually, quite a bit lower than they've been in the past. And, it's nice to see that these things are starting to work. So that's what we've seen in sort of the early results. And it's really about keeping customers with you and not giving them a reason to leave.
So your margin balances over the last year have grown faster than most of your peers. Can you talk about what's been driving that and how much additional upside you think you have?
Margin balances. It's a great... To me, when I look at margin and the way that margin has grown, it is the truest sense of investor confidence, right? Because not only are people fully invested, but they're actually then applying leverage to their positions to get further in. And that's a real sign of where we are. And I think we're, at all-time highs, at least what we see from a lot of our customers and their engagement with us. And driving margin is not something that you can do easily, right? That's a mindset for an investor. That's a type of trader who understands how to, how to apply leverage in the right situations. And you have to have the right risk profile around it. So it's not anything we do to actively entice people to get into margin. It's really making it available, making sure they know where it's available on the site, putting it in front of them, letting it know that, you have these tools for them, helping them with their risk around it, right, and how they can better, protect themselves. But it's not really anything we do to grow it. I think we've been... A beneficiary of a very strong market and some great customers who rely on us for that type of a product. When you talk about growth in the margin space, though, the product that I'm actually excited about is the securities-based lending program that we've just rolled out, right? And giving people the opportunity to monetize their position without having to sell, right? It's a little bit different than a margin product where you're supposed to invest only in securities. These are, loans that we can make against positions that folks have so that they can take some money out without having to take a mark in their book. So the biggest application for that, we think, will be on the stock plan participant side, where you have folks locked up in equity from a large company. They have a single position. They may not want to sell that stock, don't want to take the tax hit, and we just haven't offered this in the past. So that's an area akin to margin where I would expect some growth, and we'll continue to talk about that as we go forward.
Yeah, and we'll hit on that in a little bit, but I did want to first just talk on taxes. You pay a high 30s tax rate, so you'd be well-positioned if corporate tax reform passes. Could you just help us understand how that could kind of flow through to E*TRADE? And then digging maybe a level deeper, well, how should we think about the second derivative impact of lower taxes? Do you think competition will increase? What happens after tax reform passes?
Sure. You used to say death and taxes were certain, but now I'm not sure about taxes. But it's been interesting to watch this unfold and see what's gone on in Washington. Obviously, we're at a point now where you would hope they're able to pass this into law and get it done, but every day there seems to be a new hiccup. So we have looked at the two competing bills. We've been through them. And I think the one baseline that you can take away is it seems to be in the 20% sort of range that they're talking about. So starting with that as a baseline, you have to layer into that the state taxes that we pay, and so that gets you up to about 25-ish. And then you look at some of the non-deductibility that comes through on FDIC insurance and otherwise. So it puts us at about a 26% if we stay at a 20% floor. That's where, based on the two bills, but obviously we'll continue to track. There's one oddity, I think it's in the Senate bill, that the sort of lower tax rate impact won't hit until 2019, but the FDIC insurance may actually be non-deductible in 2018. So we could be in a perverse situation where the tax legislation can actually cause us to have a higher rate in 2018 than we'd otherwise see in 2018 if it just stayed status quo. So more to follow, and hopefully by earnings call or before, we'll have some more certainty around this. But I think for modeling or other purposes, we're looking at the 25%-26% effective tax rate. Your second part of the question around competition around taxes, look, we look at ourselves as pre-tax income, and that's sort of where we judge ourselves. So we would hope that most of this would go back to the benefit of shareholders, whether that be through capital returns or otherwise. But we always have a mindful eye on the competition and what they're doing to reinvest. There are similar stories throughout on different points that we can talk about. But really, we'd love to be able to flow that right back through to our shareholder base to the extent that investments, marketing, or other things aren't needed to make sure that we're competitive with what others are doing in the space.
And staying with competition, we were given a reminder in February and March that the economics of this space can change pretty quickly. How do you insulate E*TRADE from further pressure here? And what would you say to an investor who's cautious about buying your stock because of the risk of further commission pricing cuts?
So we did have a reminder. It's sort of a history repeats itself as far as I can see on this one. But just to lay out there for everyone, commissions are about 15% of our overall revenues at this point, so down quite a bit from where we once had been. So the reliance on sort of the commission line item, while obviously additional pricing cuts would be painful, and we certainly wouldn't be the first ones to move, we are at about 15% of revenues. So what we saw with the pricing cuts, and the reason that I don't understand the reason for it or the rush to do it, we saw it in 2010. Right before then, you were in the teens. In 2010, we moved to call it $9-$10, and in this past March, we moved, or February, March, we moved to $5-$7 a trade. All that did, from what I can tell, is destroy economics within our space. Right? We gave money back. We took it, folks took it from shareholders or from the company itself and gave it away. The value proposition that people are receiving with the technology and the overriding service and organizations that they get behind them, coupled with the execution quality, right, both in terms of speed, price improvement, and what they see nowadays when they place a trade, it's compelling at those levels. It was compelling at $10. It's compelling at $5. Sort of ask yourself, what's the incremental dollar worth? Right? What's another dollar gonna, does anybody really care if they have the right service platform in front of them and they know the people they talk to can give them good advice? So does it drop a couple of bucks here or there? I don't, there comes a point where, you're into a zone that it just doesn't make sense to give the economics away anymore given what's being provided right now. So I don't, you know, I don't sort of see it on that front coming through. So that's, you know, there was no displacement, there was no big run to the first mover, and we just haven't seen it. So at the 15% level, the other things that we can do to ensure, and the things we continue to do, are driving towards the derivatives trading, or, you know, derivative trading, right? An active trader, right? The options traders are with you through, you know, good and bad. They're also more active. They keep money with you in cash. They use margin. They use most of your other products and services, so driving on that line. Right, the acquisition we just did in TCA gives us another small revenue stream to come in that, you know, we believe we can help them grow over time. So there, you know, there are things that we continue to do on the investing advice continuum, right? Starting with a basic robo and growing our managed product account balances, and letting people know that E*TRADE is a, you know, a home for traders and investors as well. So it's all on, you know, in that vein, and we do keep a vigilant eye on it, but, you know, price cutting is not something that keeps me up at night.
And, you know, your corporate services business is maybe the most unique asset that E*TRADE has, and you've had some recent client wins there. Can you talk about the opportunity there and what you feel like you can do to drive share of wallet with those customers higher?
Sure. So corporate services, you know, I think the first thing that corporate services we had to do with it was take it and turn that corporate services business into a true B2B relationship business, right? To let the big corporate accounts know that we have the right tools, the number one platform, and the right folks on the sales and service organization to take care of their needs when it comes to equity compensation, right, and all of their equity plans. Keeping that group of individuals focused on selling and maintaining and retaining corporate clients is one of the biggest things that, you know, that we were able to accomplish. And we've seen, you know, some of the wins on that front. When we talked about this on our third quarter call, they were at about $4 billion implemented for the year with an $8 billion pipeline. You know, as of this morning, I think we laid out there that we have about $5 billion through the pipeline in 2017 that's already been loaded or is in the process, and another, you know, $14 billion that's on its way in the next six quarters for new signed deals and new customer engagement. So they're really sort of doing their job to fill the top of the pipeline. And we look at this in two different ways, Connor. So the first one is growing that top end of the corporate clients, because historically maintaining about 15% of that, if you grow the top side of it and you keep that percentage constant, you're in a pretty good place, just in terms of the exponential growth that you can see from maintaining those assets. And then you look at what happens on the stock plan participant side, right? The individuals who get those equity awards, who have maybe restricted stock or options or other things coming through to them from their employer. We know when they vest, we know what these folks have, we know where the money goes, you know, when it leaves us. And a lot of it does leave us because we haven't ever really looked at this as part of our, you know, E*TRADE offering, right? How do we get those folks? It's not stock plan anymore. These are E*TRADE potential customers. What services do people who are just coming into this kind of wealth need? So we've implemented a team in our executive services group to go out after, you know, that subset of people, and that includes, you know, a relationship with a high-touch, high-end private bank that's offered to, you know, that's being offered to some of these guys on a test basis right now to offer them, you know, structured finance solutions, right? What do these guys need at the higher end of the book? In terms of going the level down for individuals who are just coming into that, you know, wealth continuum, we have the offerings that E*TRADE has on its own, and in terms of, you know, our robo, our managed account products, you know, some of the other relationships we have. We have our securities-based lending products that we're now packaging for these individuals to let them know how they can access their equity awards without having to sell them, right, without having to take that tax hit. And then finally, you know, TCA, right, Trust Company of America. I talked about this at length on the earnings call, and one of the biggest reasons that we looked at that entity was really down the road to have RIAs that we can either refer to or partner with to go after this very set of customers. We know that a bunch of these dollars leave us to go to investment advisors, so why not keep it on us in terms of the custody platform and do that? So there is a concerted effort right now going on to go after this population and to grow. I think there's a lot of upside here, and if you grow that 15 percentage points, 1, 2, 3 percentage points up, you're in a pretty good place.
So sticking with the TCA acquisition, aside from the opportunities you saw in the corporate services business, What else attracted you to that opportunity? And longer term, if this deal is successful, you know, would you think about building more scale in the RIA space?
So TCA, first and foremost, is really good technology and custody platform. It fits with E*TRADE's ethos of, you know, sort of that technology forward, and will fit in very well, in terms of an offering for us. So there, you know, I've spoken to a number of their RIAs now, and the guys who use this platform, and intend to speak to a bunch of the other ones who are at the high end. They really like the functionality. They like the high-touch customer service they get from the sales organization there. And it, to me, that was, you know, impressive to hear what these folks had to say. You know, from a financial standpoint, it's a pretty good deal for us, right? And we were able to go out and finance it with preferred, and we announced a couple of weeks back, and I think it was a successful launch and you know, be accretive in 2019. And a deal this size, that's not easy to do, right? It's not a big deal for us. It's relatively small. We'll be run as a standalone. Right, when, you know, when you look at where they were as an organization, this is an entity that walks into your room and has a card that says TCA or Trust Company of America, and they're going against industry names, right? The big guys who are out there, the top four, who have, you know, household names, who your investment advisors are comfortable with if you're custodying your money there. We think we can put our brand and some of the firepower behind this and let them grow a little quicker than they have, right, to increase some of the monies that come in. We also think we can help them through providing some things, even like basic banking services, right? They don't provide a basic banking service that'll help make some of those individuals on them stickier, right, and have them have a deeper relationship with TCA. And then finally, it's about a management team. One of the things I was happiest about with Options House was how easily the management teams integrated and how we looked forward. This is the same kind of team, right? These are, you know, a very go-getter, customer-focused, tech-centric set of individuals who have fit right in with us. So we hope to see, you know, quite a bit out of this.
Sticking with the brand for a moment, you've talked about rebranding E*TRADE and getting back to your irreverent challenger roots, and with that, you've embarked on a new advertising campaign. Can you talk about your marketing strategy, and then maybe on the financial side of that advertising ramp, you know, what are you focused on in terms of new customer acquisition and cost to acquire that would make this campaign successful in your view?
Sure. So start with maybe the second part first on acquisition. You know, that's remained relatively steady and stable. We have a relatively low cost of acquisition on the customer side, and we don't see that changing, right? We're not gonna throw money at customers or do something. I think one of the things that this team has demonstrated is really around cost control and around, you know, if we're gonna invest additional dollars, we put our op margins out there. We told you it was gonna be 42 for, you know, 2018, and if we get the tax hike that's highly anticipated next week, that we'd be looking at 43 for  2018. We don't plan to take money or to diminish that op margin to do more on this side, to go out and grab customers. So we're gonna be very smart, and we have the ability to throttle forward and throttle back and to move these dollars around, right? Our marketing and advertising is more than just about the things you see on TV, right? There's account acquisition, there's some of the, what I refer to as hand-to-hand combat for some of the larger accounts and some of the more lucrative customer relationships that you can acquire. And, you know, and it's a lot being done on the inside that folks don't see in terms of driving new accounts and driving, you know, new assets to the firm. So that's sort of on the cost of acquisition side. On our branding campaign, over the past couple of years, we had lost focus, right? I mean, E*TRADE as a brand had either stagnated or was moving in the wrong direction. And to bring that back, we had to get back to what we've always done, and that is, as the smallest fish out there with one of the lowest marketing spends, you know, we had to really make a splash. We have to do more with less, so we have to be a bit irreverent. We have to speak and, you know, speak to our customers and our prospective customers in ways that, you know, they're used to hearing from us. So that's, you know, you'll continue to see that. Phase one of the brand launch is done. Phase two is coming shortly, and with that, you'll see more things like Power E*TRADE, right? Talking more about our functionality and the technology behind what we do, and letting people know how we can help them deal with their finances. The other stage of that in terms of product and rolling out more functionality is around our investment advice, you know, continuum, right? That we have the tools for the entry-stage investor in a robo platform, all the way up to folks who want, you know, SMAs. So that's more of what you'll see in the brand campaign. And initial success on brand campaign, you know, I like where we are on the account side. I like what I see in terms of what we've been able to announce. I like the buzz around the brand, and our share of voice is back where, you know, where it kind of needs to be. So more to come.
And last one for me before I see if there's any from the audience. But, you know, if the forward curve is right, we could see 2 to 3 rate hikes in over the next, call it, 15 months. And what would this mean for E*TRADE, and how should investors think about higher rates translating into better efficiency at this stage of the cycle?
Sure. So our model, as you've all seen this year, is quite scalable. And when you get rate and volume, right, and you sort of couple that with cost discipline, it can be quite successful and generate quite well. So, you know, additional interest rate hikes, we'll, you know, like the one that we all sort of highly anticipate, that absolutely has an impact. Has an impact on who we are, has an impact on, you know, our ability to generate more for our shareholders, ability to drive more value, right? After all, that's what, you know, we should be judged on as a company, as a management team, and as a board, is how much value are we driving for our shareholders. So taking those rate cuts, and looking at how much we can flow through to the bottom line and how much we can expand our margins, it really depends on, you know, on competition and on what that does in the marketplace. So even with the hike that's anticipated for next week, when we look at what we intend to do, we do in our models, even in the 43% op margin guidance that we've given, assume that we'll have to start flowing some of that back. I mean, the first 100 basis point move that we've had in rates, you know, our customer deposits and the way that they look at that cash, right, awaiting an investment opportunity, we haven't had to move rates. So, you know, we're generating quite a bit on that cash and not having to pay a lot out. So we'll see where that leads us, but obviously, you know, we have some guidance in our investor deck that we send out, and we talk about, you know, in a perfect world with another 100 basis points, where we'd be in terms of op margin. And a lot after that, do I think the model can generate more? Absolutely. But I'm not going to sit here and give you know, pie in the sky op margin numbers that is going to get competed away because we're going to have to go after more marketing. We're going to have to do more to our platform. We're going to have different tools and, you know, and other things available for our customers. Right? So we are a little bit conservative on that front, but I do anticipate that it will be a very good thing for us and for our shareholders.
I do have a couple more questions, but I wanted to see if there's any from the audience. Over there.
You've done a very nice job this year putting your float to work. How should we think about that float growing next year with this acquisition and other activities? You know, how much more on the securities leverage would you...
I apologize. Thank you.
How much more leverage would you expect to put on next year, and how do you see the funding side of the business growing over the next year based on your kind of 4% customer growth assumptions?
Yeah. So I think, you know, look, we project forward sort of where we think our balance sheet will be and what we're going to do. So by year end, we think we'll be at $63 billion. I don't see the asset side of that changing a lot, right? We invest in, you know, governments and agencies and, you know, other sort of credit instruments that our regulators and our board are comfortable with. But I do see us continuing to onboard, you know, on our balance sheet and grow through where we are now, commensurate with the rate of growth that we have on the asset side. So to the extent that, you know, the new cash comes in and we have additional assets coming in, whether it be through corporate services or through, you know, other clients, we'll continue to grow that balance sheet and drive the revenue that we have.
If I could just ask one more tied to that, but E*TRADE has been going through basically a decade-long transformation in terms of its balance sheet, whether it's growing the balance sheet, lowering its capital requirements. And if you look out to the end of 2018, you know, your balance sheet will be quote-unquote normal. How should we think about capital return for E*TRADE tracking at that point?
Yeah, so our capital actions, you know, you're right, Connor, have been a bit episodic because we've had, you know, lowering our capital ratios. We've had some releases come out. Our loan book has performed, I think, much better than anyone could have anticipated when we first started this journey to try and run that off. So it has been a bit episodic, which as a result, you know, we looked at share buybacks, we looked at onboarding additional balances, and to a certain extent, a smaller extent, you know, on the M&A side. When we get through 18 and we finish our, you know, current $1 billion share repurchase program, we'll look at the capital plan, you know, in its entirety and that view has to have a view toward a dividend program, and how we can get a more normalized capital return up and running for our shareholders when we're in a situation where there aren't these episodic releases that you really can't sort of plan and manage around. So that's absolutely on the table as we look through the use of capital over 19 and beyond.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you much for joining us.